Greetings and welcome to New Horizon, the Mind and Body Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Keisha Ross. It is a wonderful Sunday, and we are grateful to have you here with us. We've got a great guest for us today, Dr. Desiree Holmes. She's been on the show twice before and was also our inaugural guest. So we are very happy to have her back today. How are you doing, Dr. Holmes?
I'm fair to middling. How you doing?
Thank you. That is
how you doing?
I'm doing very well. Yes, let's get the laughs now, because we do have a topic today that is a bit on the heavier end, but we still need to talk about it nonetheless. So good to see you. Thank you for being here, and thank you for that intro from our exec producer, Ms. Colette Williams. So let me just give you a bit about Dr. Holmes' background. Dr. Desiree L. Holmes received her Doctorate of Philosophy in Clinical Psychology from St. Louis University in 2008. Dr. Holmes currently is a Community Health Worker Program Director at SIHF Healthcare. She also is founder and CEO of DSRD1, Psychological Consulting and Liaison Services. Over the past 20 years, she has worked and advocated for young people in many urban cities across the United States, including East St. Louis, Illinois, St. Louis, Missouri, Newark, New Jersey, and Rochester, New York, to name a few. Throughout her academic and professional career, she has been active in the area of evidence-based practice and research, whereby Dr. Holmes completed a pro-social-emotional intervention pilot study at Joseph C. Wilson Foundation Academy in Rochester, New York. Dr. Holmes is cited in journal publications in the areas of IPV, intimate partner violence, and religiosity and prayer among African American children. Dr. Holmes also developed the Adolescent Intensive Outpatient Program at Touche Regional Hospital, whereby she provided therapeutic services to adolescents and their families. Currently, Dr. Holmes serves as a United Way board member for the Southern Illinois region, executive board member for the Hoyleton Youth and Family Service, and serves on the Missouri Psychological Association Diversity Committee. Whew, that's a lot of stuff, Dr. Holmes. Thank you for being here today with us. I just want to talk a little bit about some of the inspiration for the show today. It is January is National Human Trafficking Prevention Month, so we're going to highlight a lot of that in January, but we know it's something that we should talk about, you know, beyond this time. So just to talk a little bit about, you know, the importance of this issue, trafficking of humans is driven by a global demand for cheap, unskilled, exploitable labor. Global profits from forced labor total an estimated $44.3 billion annually. Human trafficking is now the second largest criminal industry worldwide after drug trafficking and the fastest growing criminal history. So we're going to talk a lot today about the impacts on mental health functioning, but just wanted to give you an idea of where some of the thought comes from. So Dr. Holmes, you are a champion for mental health, especially minority mental health. With this in mind, we will discuss human trafficking broadly, then we'll zoom in specifically to marginalized community. Let's start with you defining human trafficking.
So keeping it very basic, very, very simple, it is human trafficking. It is a modern day form of slavery, right? It's the use of force. Yes. Coercion to control another person for the purpose of engaging in commercial sex acts or soliciting labor or services against his or her will. So it's this whole idea that I'm going to manipulate so that I could benefit at the loss of someone else. And the thing is that particularly, I think in the U.S., I don't think we really understand the magnitude of what human trafficking is and that it goes on in this country. You know, globally, it's estimated that almost 28 million people have been trafficked globally. Now, if you just break that down just to in the area that where I live, for instance, in the St. Louis metro area, since 2007, there have been over 6,000 reports of individuals that have been trafficked. And in 2021 alone, 1,500 people were reported. And why is that important? That's important because, again, we're not getting it. We're really not getting it. We're not really paying attention. And a lot of times when we have individuals that are coming up missing, mm-hmm. particularly among the African American community or even the Latinx community, when we have young girls and boys who yes. come up missing, often, and I say in boys because again, people want to just focus in on females, but we have to also acknowledge that males get kidnapped as well. They get abducted yes. as well. They are part of that whole human trafficking, cyclical system. And again, not enough information is being talked about with that.
Thank you so much for that detailed definition. And as you said, modern slavery. So we don't want to think about that because we're still working on the effects right now of slavery. Right. So to think that, you know, right. something's supposed to be abolished and it is happening is a lot. And I know sometimes folks may shy away and say, oh, well, you know, that only happens other places. You know, we may want to think it happens in other countries or quote unquote third world, but it happens right here in America. As you have mentioned, and it's important to recognize that. I'm in the St. Louis area, you know, not far from you in Illinois. In 2015, as you said, it was estimated that the average age of entry into the sex trade was 14.
That's right.
So
that's right.
Yes. So it's on the rise. So when we think about our children, we need to think about protection. You know, them hitting puberty puts them at risk of becoming more sexualized, so we need to keep all of that in mind, and we will definitely get to that fairly.
And not only that, Dr. Ross, I mean, and the average, the median length of stay is about 10 years. So it's, in addition to the age, it's also the length of time that a person, and that they can be sold how many times over again and again and again. Yes. I want to share a quick little story just to kind of give our listeners what we're talking about. When I was the clinical director at the former hospital that I used to work at, we not too far from where I am or from the hospital, a lot of strip clubs was surrounding the area. And we would get young ladies that would come to our inpatient psychiatric unit under incredible influence of God knows what. I mean, substances that we weren't even able to pick up on with our tox screen. But there was this one young lady in particular. She was 26 years old. And she had a most amazing story. This young lady came to us by way of she had been trafficked. She was kidnapped when she was 16 years old. And she was originally from the West Coast. She had been all over throughout the United States as well as in Mexico. And she ended up not far from here. But she escaped. 10 years she had been in that. And I had the opportunity to talk to her on several occasions. The strength and the bravery and her courage. Was amazing. Her will to survive.
Yeah.
The strength, the inner fortitude of what it took for this young lady to survive. And with all of that, there was still something about her that was sweet. And the fact that she was able to still hold on to that touched my heart. And I found her story not just to be profound in that what she endured, but the fact that she held on to her own level of humanity, that she refused to let this thing break her, though she clearly articulated that she had been broken in so many different ways, but yet she refused to let it break her. So this thing is real. This is real, and it's going on and it's happening. And so just kind of wanted to just kind of give a background context to what it is that we're talking about.
And thank you for using the example of resilience, because oftentimes as we talk about this now, you know, the mind may only think of the trauma piece, the broken piece. But as you talked about that indomitable spirit within, that will, that physiological, psychological drive to keep moving is amazing. So as you said, who are the victims of human trafficking? Children, girls, boys, women, adults. But we do know that certain communities will be more at risk, and we will definitely get to that. What are some of the signs of human trafficking?
You know, some of the signs is interesting, but some of the things I think that are probably more pervasive than others, but if you're not paying attention, I think is very easily overlooked. For example, if you work in healthcare and you have someone presenting in your ED, in your ER, and however they're being asked questions, but they're constantly looking at the person that's with them, and they're really unable to speak, or they can't speak alone. And no matter how you try to get that patient, that individual, you know, by him or herself, that other person is, you know, will not leave that side. And if they do, you can see what's being translated through those eye signals, right? You can almost feel it, right?
The control.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. So, having this kind of preconditioned, scripted, very well rehearsed responses and answers when you see individuals that may be living with employers, or you see individuals who are living in a very small single space with a lot of, you know, other people kind of cramped in that. Signs of physical abuse is another really big one. People who tend to be more submissive or fearful, you see them being very hypervigilant. You see this, typically again, not in every situation, but a lot of times under the age of 18 years old, you know, you'll see that. And so again, this, poor living conditions and so all of those things. And then there's, you know, there's lots of others, but that's where you really then begin to get into the physical abuse is a huge telltale sign. The scripted, almost pre-rehearsed responses, the inability to have that individual to speak alone, or giving very short and brief, you know, almost abrupt answers, or not responding at all. And then sometimes their inability to not have identification, you know, is another one, because we know that withholding identification is a big, you know, thing, for individuals. So those are some of the basic signs for someone who's being trafficked.
Thank you for those detailed responses. And for those who may have worked doing like IPV work, intimate partner violence work, it's similar.
It's very similar
to that. I wouldn't, you know, the differences, it may just be the intensity, because with a partner, there still is that fear, but with a partner, it's not always the abuse that's happening. So that means there's some kind of connection that's there other than the abuse. So that may make the relationship a little bit different in the presentation. Also, what I've noticed is not only the prescriptive responses, is the difficulty of being alone with them, like even to go and mm-hmm. do a test or anything along mm-hmm. that line. So with IPV, there may be a little bit of difference because there might be so much emotional manipulation and control that mm-hmm. they allow the partner or the spouse to go to different spaces. But with the human trafficking, it's the elopement, the escape. So it's right. that, it's that greater level of trying to stay with that individual.
And, you know, Dr. Ross, with that being said, you will see them almost on top of mm-hmm. the person. I mean, they are right there. Sometimes that might be holding their hand, you know, or holding on to their arm. I mean, it's, you know, the space there is right there. They're literally on top of that person. And if the questions are becoming a little too personal, then the other person will jump in and they will begin to answer and start to respond for that person. And mm-hmm. I know, you know, and then sometimes the healthcare worker will have to say, well, no, you know, I need yeah. for Desiree to you know, to answer. I need for Desiree. I really need to hear from Desiree. Yes. And so it's a lot going on there in that little space.
And you know, the idea of this can happen to anyone, anytime, similar to IPV, from different backgrounds, some are more at risk. But even as we talk about what are some of the signs, there are businesses that are doing work and training on this. Some airlines and hotels have undertaken these kind of programs. For example, some sex trafficking of victims are transported by plane. Delta has trained nearly 60,000 of their employees to recognize the signs of sex trafficking. Similar to how like doctors are trained to mandate report, this is an area now that we're seeing learning more to help to try to help others, or when necessary. Also, hotels are doing work that they are also helping in terms of starting to recognize what is there. So those are just some of the things to know that it is going on in terms of helping with prevention. So,
I'm sorry, Dr. Ross. I just want to say that I belong to an organization, Top Ladies of Distinction Incorporated. And so one of the things that we do in January, some of the local truck stops, we yes. put up the flyers in the bathrooms with mm-hmm. the phone numbers attached yes. to the bottom, so for the tearaways, so that if they go into the restroom, because that's one of the few places that the trafficker, yes. unless it's a female, and then that's when it gets a little tricky, because mm-hmm. human traffickers are not just males, they're males and females. Traffickers come in, you know, both male and female, and so that's another one of those myths that we have to really dispel. But we will go around to the local truck stops, and we mm-hmm. would put those flyers in there, and so that a person could then tear away that yes. Hotline, you know, the number, and have something to call. And then we also give the numbers for, you know, local organizations as well that can help them, you know, if that's something that they're wanting to try to escape. So I just wanted to just kind of highlight that's something that yes. we do every January.
Thank you, TLOD, for doing that. I mean, just think about it. A small piece of paper could save a life. In the airports, you see it too. So this is where it may not be consciously on the mind, but the next time you're going through the airport and in a bathroom, look, you will see those listed as well, like yeah. within stalls. So we focus a great deal on intersectionality on this show. Talk with us about the intersection of gender and race as it relates to human trafficking.
You know, Audre Lorde says there is no such thing as single issue struggle, because we do not live
yes.
single issue lives.
Say it again.
Right. right? So when we get down really to the bottom of it, you know, oppression is going to be at the bottom of that. We begin to bring in race and gender. And that's a pretty interesting thing because, you know, Doc, one of the things that I discovered that here in the United States, you know, depending on, and people have, they'll put in a wish list for who and what they want. So the traffickers will oftentimes, you know, you want a certain skin complexion, a certain mm-hmm. color, a certain eye color, a certain body type, shape, whatever the case is. They put their wish list in. So the traffickers, that's where they go out. And if they happen to come across, and so they'll be on the lookout for someone who kind of fits that. But interestingly enough, what I did not know is that indigenous Native American females are at the top of that list.
Yes, they are. They are, and systemically, yes.
Yes. Yes. And I bet our listeners would never have thought that one.
And there's a show now, Alaska Daily. So that is based on the events that have occurred in Alaska for Indigenous and Inuit women. And as it plays out, you know, even within like the police system, then the court system. So it's not only like the traffickers, it's also like these other systems that, you know, don't help. So you don't have the police looking for these
right.
individuals. You know, their life is not counted at the same level as, you know, their white counterparts. I recall on one of the episodes that there was one white woman that went missing, and they literally, the newspaper literally looked at the amount of money they spent to look for that one white woman. And there had been numerous Indigenous women that went missing over years, and they had not used a fraction of that cost to look
for that one person. For that one person.
And I know people would say, well, you can't put a number on life. No, you can't, but you can put a number in terms of resources that you use to help find people. And it definitely was not equal.
No. So when you, and you said it. So when people come up missing, particularly people of color, right? Black, Indigenous, and people of color just across the board, you know, it's not taken as seriously. It's not viewed as something that's serious, as if we don't love our people, as if we don't care mm-hmm. that our people are missing, as if we don't care that our family members, our loved ones, our brothers and sisters, and even if it's not blood and family, just the fact that this person is from a community that we are associated with, there's a lot that goes into that. And so when you begin to talk about, again, human trafficking, and again, the outrage, every time a little black girl goes missing mm-hmm. in America, and you do compare and contrast that with whenever there is a Caucasian female that goes missing, more often than not, even if they don't recover her live body, they still somehow manage to recover remains mm-hmm. in comparison more often. I'm not saying in every case that is the case, but what I am saying is that more often yes. they are able to recover, even if it is the remains of the body. They are able to recover the remains of the body, as opposed to, you know, there are black little girls, well, who are grown women by now, you know, that they've been missing for years and years and years, and nothing, you've never heard of anything mm-hmm. about them, you know, from them. And I remember, I'm old enough to date myself, but I remember on the back of milk cartons.
Yes.
Right? When they used to put, have you seen this missing child?
Even you know, face on the carton, yes.
Yes.
It was rarely ever us.
Yes. And I'm old enough to, you know, I'm old enough to remember that. I'm also old enough to remember that in grocery stores, a bulletin board would have those pictures, you know, of people on the bulletin board in the grocery stores, and they would have it at a place to where as you're checking out, you would be able to see that. So race matters. I don't care what anybody says when it comes to human trafficking. Race matters, because when you begin to look at folks who are migrant workers, mm-hmm. they come up missing. Who's looking for them? You know, because they're considered and classified as undocumented. They don't have their papers or their paperwork. So color matters, race matters, gender matters, and age matters. All of those things are coming together, and folks are coming up missing, and these are the very individuals who are in fact being trafficked. And then when you begin to also think, like I said, people around the world, they have a wish list. And so, so Native American, indigenous women, they're considered as exotic. African American females are considered as exotic. You know, so, Latina women, they are considered, you know, as exotic. So all of these different things. And so it matters.
Yes, it does. Intersectionality, race matters, socioeconomic. So are you in a community where it's less valued? So all of those things do matter. This is such an important topic. I want to remind folks that you can text in your questions to 682-710-1101. Again, that's ITRN text question 682-710-1101. And if you'd like to learn more about missing and murdered Indigenous women, go to mmiwusa.org. Also, if you would like to report suspected human trafficking to federal law enforcement, call 1-866-347-2423. Again, that's 1-866-347-2423. And we'll repeat that at the end of our program, as well as we will post it online. So thank you for giving that intersection. You just talked about race. You talked about socioeconomics. You talked about nationality status, talking about undocumented individuals. Now, can you expand on intersectionality a bit by highlighting some of the unique risk factors for the trans community?
Wow. I mean, look, just the fact that they're trans.
Yes.
Right?
Just that within itself.
Just that. You don't even have to go any further than that. But the risk factors involved there that makes them even more vulnerable, the fact that they're trans, so homophobia within the family, within the community, stigma, they may be stigmatized within the home, and families will then withdraw their own resources mm-hmm. from them, kick them out, won't have anything else to do with them, won't acknowledge them. And then sometimes, whatever their, religious affiliation may be a part of that as well. But just the fact alone that they're trans, because we know that individuals are at a higher risk for violence in general who may be gay, lesbian, bisexual anyway. So there's a higher propensity for them to be aggressed upon. So violence is much higher. Their, poverty, again, because if you are an underage minor, again, you get kicked out of the home. Where you're going to go? You're going to go to the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're on the streets and homeless, now you become even more vulnerable. And you become even more vulnerable then for the sex trade itself.
Yes.
Because listen, folks gotta eat. You know, you either begin to, in some way, some shape, some form, there is the lure, if you will, for criminality within that. And so there it is. And so human trafficking then becomes, I think, a peanut butter and jelly, eggs mm-hmm. and bacon. You know, it becomes this, It goes hand in hand.
Association, yes.
The association between it, it becomes such an integral part until it's almost difficult to kind of tease that apart. And we know that the longer a young person is on the street, the more vulnerable they become and the more susceptible that they become. So just being trans alone and all of those other mitigating factors increases their risk, it increases their vulnerability, and increases the likelihood that some predatory type of person is going to come along and manipulate that and, you know, psychologically get all in their head and start having all different kinds of conversation. And there that, you know, there they go.
And what you talked about there, like living while Black, living while trans, if you are part of a marginalized community, you know what those statements mean. For those who aren't from that community and listening, that means that you're at greater risk. So I do want to adjust my language and say that it's not because they're trans, it's not because they're Black in the sense of that alone, that part of their identity, but it's the discrimination that goes along with that. So the racial discrimination that goes with if you're BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, person of color, the discrimination that goes along with if you're LGBTQ+, the discrimination that goes along, like if you are in poverty, because there's stigma that goes along with that. So recognizing it's the system. So meaning if we didn't have this discrimination and all of these structural things that happen outside, external to who we are, we wouldn't have those type of issues. So I just want folks, you know, listeners to recognize, because it could feel like, well, darn, we just, we're out of luck because of who we are, but it's not who we are. It's the system. It's the things that we have to experience throughout our life.
And thank you for clearing that up and cleaning it up. You're right. I don't want anybody to, you know, kind of take away from what I'm saying. But do understand that those populations, definitely, because they're already in situations of vulnerability, that it just intensifies the increase of the likelihood. And our young people, particularly our young people, our youth, they already don't have the cognitive wherewithal to manage all of that and to navigate all of that. And so just, you know, being young and having to have to figure all of that out, that also lends itself to, and we're not, you know, we've talked about being under the age of 18, but age is yet another thing that really does come, you know, come into play, because we know that impulsivity, not making the best decisions, not being able to navigate, you know, that space with maturity. And then here's another thing, Dr. Ross, that we haven't really gone into yet. But, you know, if a young person is being bullied and they're being bullied and being even more ostracized, I was talking to, yesterday and today, I was talking to a group of teens and we were talking about this subject. And, you know, and they had brought up the fact that, other teens, they, how cruel they can be with someone that they, you know, might be suspecting who is poor based on how they dress. Maybe they're coming to school wearing the same kind of clothes. And these are some other indicators, right? That not everybody, they don't always keep kids from going to school. Some kids still will continue to go to school, but then you have to look at the manner in which they're coming to school as well. And so they were talking about, you know, they said, well, Dr. Holmes, well, when you have somebody who you suspect, you know, who may be in a situation to where they're being physically abused and where they may be forced to have to do something, you know, against their will, we won't necessarily know that, but a lot of times they're being picked on just because of who they are. And what do we do about it? And these were kids who were asking, what do we do if we suspect that another kid is going through that situation?
Yeah. So, and I mean, folks will say, oh, bullying is not new. It's been around forever. Yes, but we do have to realize that we're in a time that things are intensified, I think, in a different way. Because think about it. You used to have to write a send a telegram, write a letter, do something to get messages across. But now with media and social media, there can be that instantaneous, and it's not only individualized anymore. I can think about that. Back in the day, it was like, yeah, meet me on the schoolyard after school, right? Maybe things would happen like
that. Meet me outside.
Yeah, meet me outside. But now it's like, with this level of media, there's a higher level of narcissism. People feel like they can say things in a different way than being in person. And then you have the tag on. So it isn't just one person. You got like 600 people that tag on to one comment. So for the person who's having issues with self-esteem, I mean, that just becomes too much. So yes, there's nothing quite new under the sun, but I think we have to look at the exacerbating factors of today. Now we have, you know, we have pandemic, you know, all of these things that are happening that make an impact. So all of that human trafficking during that time, you know, we have to think about how there likely has been an increase in those areas. So we do have a listener question. And before I get to that, I do, as you mentioned earlier, you defined human trafficking very well. Thank you. We talked about labor, low labor. We talked also about sex work, but keeping in mind organs. Organs is also, I know folks don't want to hear that, like, oh, it's Sunday, but yeah. Keep it in mind, that is something that happens, that, you know, people are trafficked for their organs because it takes a long time on donor list. And unfortunately, that's an illegal dark market there too, in terms of organs. So being aware in just a safety, being out, keeping an eye on children. If you're an adult, also being aware of this, of your surroundings, all of those things become important.
Well, and see, right. And here's the other caveat with that, with the organs. There are many countries who believe that certain organs, have magical or medicinal powers. And so, and it comes at a great price. They can bring a great price. And so we talked about that in the group earlier today. And I asked the question, I said, well, why do you think, you know, that your age group is the age group that's being targeted? And so one of the responses was, well, because we don't have all of the diseases that you guys have.
No, but you know, but that happens. So yes, when we think of there's countries that young girls, as soon as they hit puberty, they're thought about as wives, you know, yes. or the possibility because they're virgins, and all of these myths that, okay, if you're with a virgin, you know, all of these things that go along with it. So yes, definitely the myths that are out there about these kind of things. So I want to get to our listener question. So our listener question, Dr. Des, a large percentage of these victims are from foster homes. How can we break the connection between foster care and human trafficking? Interesting.
That's again, that was another one of those things that we talked about earlier today, where we talked about the vulnerabilities of children in foster care is more vulnerable. And one of the young people, you know, and I asked the question again, so why do you think that someone in foster care would be more at risk or is at higher risk for human trafficking? And so we talked about, you know, one of the young people has said, well, they already, you know, feel like nobody loves them, nobody mm-hmm. cares. Mm-hmm. And so if something happens to me, you know, is anybody going to come and look for me? I'm already in foster care. Who's going to love me? Who's going to come love me enough to come look for me? Right. And so what we can do, I think the thing, those of us who work whatever capacity in that system as mandated reporters. Again, we have to really begin mm-hmm. to understand that the complexities of what these children have already been pre-exposed mm-hmm. to, the level of previous trauma that they've already encountered, the level of previous situations that they have already come out of. So there's almost like this help me out here, Dr. Ross. I'm thinking of it's kind of escaping me a particular word here, but there's almost like this pre-existing
vulnerability.
Thank you. Thanks, Doc. Yes. The pre-existing vulnerabilities. Exactly. So then it's almost as if human trafficking then is a very easy lateral move for them to slide into. It's not then this great big jump. It's this very easy lateral move for them to already move from situations that they're in to move right on into human trafficking. It's very easy to do.
And as you said there, pre-existing vulnerability, that's why we in our community, we have to get back to the neighborhood watch, looking out for each other. You know, it's not just looking out for your own child, looking out for all children. That's how when I'm out, it's like any child I see, it's like, I want to make sure that they're safe. I recall being in the park with my husband and my child, and there was a man out there. He didn't have any children, and he was talking to children. So we were like, What's going on? And pretty much we scared him off because he recognized that we knew that he didn't have good intentions being out there. And he was asking children, you know, what school they go to, their names. And, you know, even though I was a stranger, I talked to the kids and told them, you know, don't ever share information with people that you don't know. And even at the 11 and 12 year old age where you think, oh, sending them out to the park on their own, try to have an adult with you. If it's not an adult or older cousin, 17, 18, 19 years old, and don't give personal information about yourself because now he knows where they go to school. So he can target them now to go to their school.
Right. The other thing that we also talked about in the group earlier today, I said, you know, at that certain age group where folks start thinking they grown and as they used to say back in the day, smelling themselves, right? But what we talked about was you still need to let somebody know who you're with, where you're going, what time you're arriving, how long you're going to be there. And I also said to them, I said, and here's another thing too. Just because your girlfriend or your guy friend or your group of friends that you know, maybe you do know them really well. You've grown up with them. You've been friends for a really long time. But now here is a new person that you don't know anything about. And they'll say to you, oh, well, that's my boy. My boy is cool. You know, well, that's my girl. She's cool. But you don't know that. Don't take that as an automatic and as a given. So you don't be getting in nobody's car just because they're saying, oh, no, it's all good. They're cool. No. And whenever you get a feeling, you trust that feeling.
Yes.
And
you're
so
good.
Don't just ignore that. You know, so that's the other thing. And I told them, I said, you know, and then go in pairs. Stop, don't be cutting through alleys. Don't be walking out here by yourself. Don't be cutting through taking no alleys and thinking, you know, let me go this. No, these are the things. Did you see the thing on TikTok with the woman who was out jogging? Oh my goodness, this is recent. The woman was out there jogging. This is floating around on TikTok. And the woman was out jogging, African American female, grown woman jogging. This guy comes out of nowhere. Now the camera picked it up. I don't know if it was on a light post, but it picked it up. So I don't know where he came from, but all of a sudden he came into the view where he's jogging behind her, right? And so she kind of looks over her shoulder. So she kind of slows up to let him pass her. But then he stops and pretends like he's winded. So she kind of picks up, then he picks up and he kind of catches up and he's matching her, you know, again. So she does the same thing. She slows down, you know, to where she's trying to let him go ahead and pass her. He does the same thing. This time when he catches up with her, then that's when he goes in for the grab. There's a car that's already parked there with the door open. The intent was to drag this lady into the car, but she fought him off. She fought him off and he ended up basically giving up the ghost, and he went and ran and jumped in the car and the car took off. Now she was able to fight him off, but these are the kinds of things. But so now, and I said to them, I said, and I gave them that same scenario, and I said, don't be out here walking by yourself early in the morning, late at night. And I said, and here's the thing. These traffickers and kidnappers, they've gotten so bold, they don't care anymore. It's broad daylight.
Yeah. Go broad in pairs. Daylight. Safety in numbers. We came up like that. Safety in numbers. I encourage women, especially young people, go to your self-defense classes. There's 10 to 15 steps that can save your life. Carry your pepper spray, all of these things. But the main thing is being aware of your surroundings, right? She was aware. That's what helped to save her life. Because when someone gets to jump on you, it doesn't matter. Even if you have a gun, you may not be able to fight off. So she was aware of what was happening. So women, especially young children, when you're going to the grocery store, make sure you're holding the hands of your children. You know, they're like, oh, they're old enough, they can this and that. No, it just takes a minute for a snatch and grab. And when you when you're putting the cart away, don't leave the children alone. Make sure that they are safe and secure. We have to be aware, because this is what happens with the snatch and grabs, the van. It just takes them a moment. Even when
I won't even park past a vehicle that's bigger than mine. I won't do it anymore, because they tell you again.
Yes, they encourage you to not do that.
They encourage you not to do that. So I don't even park next to anything that's bigger than what I'm driving, and certainly not a van. I don't do it.
And when I say they, who is they? CIA, FBI, data statistics, as you said, Dr. Holmes. Follow your gut. When your stomach starts to like cringe, when the elevator opens up and something says, well, I don't know if I want to go in there, but then you rethink it like, well, I shouldn't think like that. No, follow your gut. If you're walking into the parking lot and something's saying, don't go that way, go another way, follow that. If the hair starts to stand up on the back of your neck and you don't know why, follow your gut, because these are the things that save your life. FBI always says, if you get pulled into a vehicle and you are taken to another location, your chances of being found is much less.
It definitely decreases. And when you're driving and you are driving at night and you are in the car by yourself and folks be trying to ride up on you like they're trying to hit your bumper, get off at the nearest exit and pull into a lighted, place, a Walmart, a gas station where it's well lit, and call the police, because these are some of the tactics that are out there that are being used, and they're real, because they want you to get out your car. And again, because either they want to take your car and take you too. So it's not an either or, they'll take you and the car and all of the contents that's in it. So we have to be very, very vigilant. We have to be very careful. And we, like you said, Doc, we have to be alert. We have to really be alert, and we have to be on it. We can't be, distracted on our phones, and not paying attention, and we do too much. We got to stop so that we can become aware.
Yes, we're doing too much.
We're doing way too much when we're out there.
Be mindful. We have a question from our exec director, Ms. Williams. We'll do that question, and then we will get into the psychological and emotional impact, because, of course, there's never enough time. Ms. Williams, your question or comment.
I think this is such incredible information. It's so amazing. But one of the things that I wanted to also comment on is Generation Millennial. They are a lot more accepting and easier. I have to tell my daughters, when you get to your location, wherever you're going, you need to say, I'm home, or or I'm there. You need to say something. I am much older than all of you. I do not go without saying, where I am and who I'm with. I'm getting on a flight on Tuesday morning, a 6 a.m. flight, and I'm not going to take a Lyft because I'm afraid to get in the car because these people cannot be trusted either.
Right.
And so I don't want to get into a transportation where somebody just all of a sudden. So I don't want to do that because it is extremely, nowadays, it's very, very dangerous. I know girls that went to the school in Los Angeles where I worked. A couple of them were never seen or heard of.
Yeah. And I know folks may hear this.
Yes.
And say, oh, that's paranoid, but
no, it
you know,
isn't.
You can't play with your life.
It isn't.
You know, you'll never get that. You can never get that back. So if you're killed, you can't get that back. And then
that's
if you're
right.
harmed, you have to live with what you have to live with the trauma of what has happened. So we're not doing this to scare people straight.
No.
We're not saying that life can't be beautiful and it can't be great. It can, because we're cautious. We're aware of our
surroundings. It's about being cautious.
Yes. It limits the chances.
Yeah, it's simply about being cautious. My granddaughter of just a few months ago was out in the front yard of her aunt's house playing. And a white guy drives up and asks her for directions.
Yeah.
A grown man asking child.
Yeah. It's different days.
Yes.
You know, we grew up in the time like stay out until the lights were on, but usually it was a large group. And then also when you think about working, it may have been, you know, parents were out of the home less, but these aren't those times. So even when I'm in the yard, it's like my daughter can't go past a certain point without me.
She's
going to be on a certain point, I'm going to be on the outer part of her, because I always say, you know, you have to be within arm's reach for me, because if not, there's not much.
Right.
That I can do.
Right. And I don't go into certain areas. I will not get off the freeway and go find a gas station. I will not get off the freeway and go find anything, because I have become all too familiar with what happens in places and why you don't go in these places. And it's not because of any type of paranoia. It's because of the things that do take place, and you're putting yourself at risk. when you allow yourself to say, oh, it's okay. It isn't okay. And you have to be vigilant. You have to be cautious, and you have to be aware. And that's one of the things that I am extremely keen on, is being aware of my surroundings and where I am. I want everybody that I know to be aware. This is not the day or time. Not at all.
No.
This is not it. And unfortunately, things have gotten to this point. And I'm much older than you ladies. And there was a time we could leave our front doors wide open.
Absolutely.
Go to bed and leave.
Not anymore. You better lock those doors.
Right. No. You better have several locks on the door.
Yeah.
Okay. We could go to bed on a summer night, leave the screen door just open, and we were okay. Everybody slept on the floor in the living room, and the door was wide open. The screen door was closed, of course, but we didn't care. My husband used to call it Grand Central Station because everybody would go in and out. We didn't have to care back then. Okay. But nowadays, you don't even want anybody in your home.
No.
You don't want people to come and go. No, you do not. Because of the risks. It's not about paranoia. It's not about not knowing and trusting. We trust, I believe, wholeheartedly in God. My faith is very strong. It's these folks that are here on this planet that I don't have faith in. Okay?
So
these folks.
So on that note, I want to get two more questions, and thank you for sharing, Williams, because time flies.
Thank you, Dr. Holmes and Dr. Ross.
It's never enough time. So I'm going to do the two-part question so you can just flow into it. So you've defined what human trafficking is. You've talked about, you know, the populations that are more at risk, that are marginalized. You've also talked about, like, what are the tactics, you know, the ways in which it happens. Now talk with us about the psychological and emotional impact of human trafficking and what kind of treatment is available for
survivors. trauma is, you know, first and foremost. This is where I think you're looking at individuals that will certainly qualify for a diagnosis of PTSD, right? But
yes,
individuals can greatly suffer from anything from generalized anxiety disorder to panic, you know, where they begin to start suffering with panic attacks. Again, you know, we talked about where individuals can have difficulty with sleeping. They can't sleep. You may even see some sleep disturbance. And so again, you're going to see things that are going to be very parallel to an individual who may be having, suffering with depression and or anxiety. You're going to see some very similar symptoms symptomatically with these individuals. Because again, psychologically, the trafficker, they're trying to break that individual down. I mean, all the way down. So psychologically, they're going to use intimidation. They're going to name calling. They're going to make threats. They're going to, you know, threaten to kill the individual, kill family members if you try to escape. You know, I've got your school ID or your driver's license or your papers or, you know, whatever information that you may possibly have. So I know where your parents live. I know where your mother lives. I know where your mother works. And, you know, I'll kill her. You know, God forbid, you know, your little sister, your little brother, you know, these kinds of things. Mm-hmm.
Manipulation,
and so all of these things, right? So psychologically, so when you have coupled that with, I'm already beating on you physically, I'm withholding food, I'm withholding water for days at a time. So, you know, and not to even mention that substances get introduced. So crack and heroin and, and all kinds of things, meth, these very, very strong, hardcore drugs are introduced to the individual, whether they are fed and they don't know it or forced to go ahead and actively participate, you know, in these kinds of things. Just real quick, again, when I was doing my internship in New Jersey, yay, my home state, and I was doing my internship there in Newark, New Jersey, and I was working in this, what they call, they don't call it that anymore now, but they called it a therapeutic community. And we had young women there who could be there with their children up to the age of 2 years old. And a lot of the women that were there, they had been trafficked. And they talked about how at 10 and 11 years old, they were being introduced to heroin. And I mean mainlining, right? Not just snorting it or smoking it, but shooting it. And so, you know, by the time these girls would be 11 and 12 years old, they were full blown strung out. But these were the things that the traffickers was again using to keep them dependent upon the trafficker. And so these are all of some of the things that are done and used to psychologically have an impact. So the trauma, what they've witnessed, the events that they've participated in, the rapes that they have endured, right? The gang rapes sometimes, you know, the near death situations, and in some cases, their own near death situations to where they've been suicidal and they've attempted to take their own lives and maybe were not successful. So all of these things, so trauma is a big part, evidence-based traumas, you know, therapies need to be, you know, will be best, but it's going to be a combination of things because it's so complex and it's so complicated in working with these cases.
So not typical. Thank you. Not typical. You know, there is cognitive therapy, CPT, cognitive processing therapy. There's EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. But again, this is so different. As you said, a decade, like some people might be in this for a decade in terms of enslavement. So we also have to think of the neurological effect, meaning the way your brain is wired. So if we talk about 14 is like the average mean age, at 14 to 24, the brain is still developing. So in terms of right. what that does to the brain, we have to think about that. You know, we typically end on the hour, but we don't have a show today immediately after. So we've got an extra 10 minutes that we can go to discuss this a little bit more, because it's very important for us to recognize this. I'm grown. And as you said, when I go places, Miss Yolanda, I tell folks too, I let them know where I'm going, even for the work I do, because I work in correction setting, different places. I'm going here. Look, this is the address. This is the contact person. Because truly, if anyone came to you and said, well, where were they going? And I don't know.
And I don't like, I don't know. That word, I don't know, doesn't
that, work. That doesn't work. Look, I can't go more than a couple of days and not answer my phone to Dr. Ross, because she ready to send in the federales on me. Okay. And she'll leave nice little threatening little messages that lets me know, let me call her and let her know, and I mean, when I'm traveling, like you said, I'll be leaving out in a couple of weeks myself. I typically will send her my itinerary. Yes. Look, she know better than what I know, because I'll be like, well, I have to. No. Your flight leaves at 5:55 a.m. in the morning. I'm like, well, dang, she know better than I do, right? Because exactly. She does not play. But this is what I need, because the thing is that it's good to know that you have someone who's concerned. And when they see something altered with your pattern of behavior, something very well could be a mess. Yeah.
Right.
And so we do.
And what you said right there to the parents, our listeners who are parents or any caregiver, if you're a auntie, an uncle, if you're an older sibling that parents, again, your presence must be known.
And you know what?
At the school, at the aftercare program, the coaches must know.
Yes.
They know you. So and not to say that this can't happen to anyone, but as we said, pre-existing vulnerability.
Right.
The children who don't have anyone, the quote unquote, as they used to call it, disadvantage, that they don't ever see anyone is there. So then the coach thinks, oh, well, you know, No one's ever around for this one. So let me start grooming. So
grooming.
Yeah. And unfortunately, there are so many people out there. And I mean, so many people, a boatload of people who call themselves, givers, who call themselves doing things, who don't really care about when a kid comes and goes. My granddaughter was in a drill team. And the director of the drill team did not want us there. Her, a Black woman, did not want us there. And she said, we created a distraction. The kids couldn't concentrate. The kids couldn't do this. Mm-hmm. So they always practiced in the back of the high school, which how do you want folks to be in the back of the high school and kids are leaving here and you have a problem with the family being there? I have a problem with her having a problem with us being there.
But that's where we have a choice. Okay. But that's where the good part is, you're thinking like that and you have a choice. So you have to say, is this something that I feel comfortable? Right. So parents, talk to your children.
Absolutely.
Talk to the teenagers, you know, as they're getting older, you know, a little bit of oppositional defiance will come. But that goes with the territory. But, you know, you have to continue to talk to them.
Yeah.
Be aware. When you go places, don't put your drink down. Don't take things for
granted,
because all of these things happen. So we know, we've talked about it on other shows, but with human trafficking specifically, if someone is slipped something in their drink, then the next thing you know, they're taken to another
location. They're gone. Yeah. I've had two people in my life who went missing, and one was missing for 2 days and she was a Jane Doe. And gone in the hospital at Killikene. And the other one, they never found her body. And it was a gigantic story across the country because the LA County Sheriff let her leave the sheriff station walking in a remote place up in Malibu. Never seen or heard of again. Never.
And I've been to Malibu. You got mountains out there.
Right. And the sheriff is taking no responsibility for it. And it was, it's still a big deal. And this mm-hmm. took place in 09.
Wow.
In 09. Never seen or heard of again. And she left the sheriff's station walking. Walking.
And see, again, you know, these are the things. So we haven't really gone there. But Sister Williams, since you did, I feel compelled in my spirit to touch that, right? And that is this. It's a little bit of a PSA. We have to. He's just laughing because see, this is where Sister Girl get ready to kick in, right?
Go ahead, Dr. Dez.
Yeah, this is Dr. Dez now, right? Not okay. Dr. Holmes. This is Dr. Dez. There's a difference. There's a difference. But this is where we have to stay on top of our law enforcement.
Yes.
Our political local officials. This is where we say literally to them, hell no, I won't go. You're not going to brush me off, mm-hmm. pat me on my head, pat me on my back, and send me on my way and think that this bull jive response that you just gave me is good it's enough okay. for me because, you know, because you looking at me like, oh, well, she a black female.
Right.
And no. Yes. I'm going to be up in your face. I'm going to be here on a daily, if not daily, regularly enough that you going to know. You going to know, oh, God, here she come again.
Yes.
You going to be compelled to give me something just to get up out of your face because you going to
yeah.
looking at my
that's
face
right.
and hearing my mouth. And that's
right.
another thing to mm-hmm. where we as a community, as the collective consciousness of a community, like how we did, for instance, with Sister Sandra Bland, like how we
yes.
did
say know, her
for,
name.
For, yeah, say her name. How we did for the other sister, oh, she's in was it Kentucky?
Brianna.
Yeah, thank
oh,
you.
Oh, Brianna Taylor.
Sister Taylor. Then the other young lady, you know, in was it Texas? That got was playing the videos and with a nephew and was shot and killed in her home.
Oh yeah,
we
yeah.
We have to, as a collective yeah. consciousness, as a community,
yeah.
we have to, we must. It is imperative that we continue to speak, like we said, say her name, speak these names, keep these names in the news, keep them, you know, Roland Martin is excellent with making sure that he's always promoting individuals, you know, who have succumbed or who are missing and things such as that nature. We've got to keep our news outlets, our law enforcement, our mm-hmm. political people that we voted you in. And when we don't see that we're getting the right results and the outcome is not favorable, then we need to vote them the hell on up out of there.
That's
and
right.
get folks in
we
there that's really going
to
pick
that's
up the cause. And take what we are having to have to deal with, you know, seriously in
right.
terms of our children mm-hmm. coming up missing. Now I said it and I'm done and I'm gonna shut up. And that was my,
no,
answer.
It's
and
the I'm truth. Done,
but you know, Dr. Ross, you know, you wasn't going to get out of here without me going off, right?
Yes. I mean, that's right. Because many people say, oh, I don't vote. Now we're not saying that voting is going to stop oppression and save the world, but it's the accountability piece. Like when you don't vote, the accountability isn't there. So now we can't say when these things aren't being done, you know, what's going on, because locally voting in your sheriff, you know, your representative, I mean, the prosecutor. I mean, everybody.
Yes, everybody.
It all makes a difference. So, again, we have to look at it as piecemeal. There's some things that's for us by us, FUBU, that we can't have other people do. That is us having respect for ourselves, who we are within our community and holding ourselves accountable for that. But when it comes to the law and what we're talking about that's happening, yes, if they're not looking for us at that same level as our white counterparts, because Karen can call and say somebody's walking the dog and in the neighborhood and they'll run to the rescue. But when Keisha says something, it's different. Right. So, but there's power in numbers. So the key to what you said, Dr. Dez, is the collective consciousness. Yes, it cannot just be five or six of us. It has to be tens of thousands of us.
Millions. Consistently. So if that's what we're doing in St. Louis, then we should be doing it in LA. If that's what we're doing in LA, then we need to be doing that in Phoenix, Arizona. If we're doing it in Phoenix, Arizona, we need to be in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It is the collective consciousness across the board, consistently holding people accountable. And this is why people, some folks get all up in arms, Black Lives Matter, because damn it, we don't matter. And we've got to to really say that, yes, we do. Anytime one of our little Black girls or little Black boys come up missing, we want answers. You got the technology is out there. If you can solve a daggone case that was from 60 years ago, why can't you find these folks?
That's right. That's absolutely
because again, this is why we have Black Lives Matter, right? Because historically we have to prove that we matter.
That we matter.
And this is the whole Intentional Talk Radio Network. The platform is for that reason, to change the narrative. New Horizon, the mind and body connection, is for that reason, because if we didn't talk about this today, there may be some folks that it's not on the conscious mind.
It would never.
So now we've done consciousness raising today. So
that's
from
right.
today moving forward, you can't say that you don't know and understand that this is a real issue.
That's
our
right.
children, our
and
sisters,
every
our brothers.
Every January, it is national.
It matters.
National human trafficking, modern day slavery. There's another part. What's the other part? Awareness Month. And particularly January the 11th. That is
the day
that is highlighted. There's one last final thing, Dr. Ross and Sister Williams, that I do want to say. And that is, in this country, Super Bowl weekend.
Yes, that's the highest.
Oh my God. Yes.
In
yes,
this
it
country
does. That's
for
right.
human trafficking.
Yes, it
so
does.
So when you're going out here to the Super Bowl and you're attending these parties and you're having a good time, you're getting your drink on, you're getting your party on, whatever the case is, understand, pay attention to what's going on, because that is the single biggest
thing that
occurs in this country, where human trafficking, the week of leading up to all of those festivities, usually it's about 2 weeks out, but it's everything leading up, because people are trying to secure those hotels. They're trying to pivot and get a good, you know, where they're trying to get in them VIPs and all of that. And what are they doing? They dragging these young folk with them.
Girls.
And human trafficking is occurring.
Yes, it
Make
is.
No doubt
yes,
it about
is.
It.
That's
so
right.
the question, so we have a question from our showrunner. You know, why can we get some details about why that happened? So keeping in mind, part of what's happening is, like, wherever the Super Bowl is happening, the city is basically, like, all of their focus, right, is going into that one particular area. So for large events, what's going to happen is there's going to be a lot of law enforcement that is now going to be paying attention to, like, the larger events. So again, just that vulnerability that celebrations and different things are happening. So there's susceptibility in terms of one, like, kind of like the guard being down, right? Like in a city. So there's that. So it makes it useful in that. And in terms of network, it's a big party time.
Yes,
there's
it
lots
is.
Lots of parties. That, so again, so don't go and be like, oh, they said that it's, the Super Bowl doesn't do it. It's just that it is a time where, like, as a nation, many people are putting focus towards that. So there's going to be, like, that perfect storm of a lot of things that are happening. So for people going out to parties, do not put down your drink.
You drink,
don't
right.
take drink from people that you don't know.
No, go.
Nowadays, the bartenders could be in on stuff. You just have
to
be very
careful. They are in on it. The bartenders
so you have to have your guards up. Like if you don't have to drink, I know some people say, what fun is that? But if you don't have to drink, drink, don't.
Don't.
Look, don't.
Not even water.
Don't. Don't.
If you don't have to. Yeah.
Because a lot of times the bartenders are in on it, right? They will pick out the girls, right? And then they've got, because for however many girls, they get a cut. They get a percentage of the cut. You know, from the person, from the trafficker. So they're getting a percentage of the cut and they're looking at the one who's already been drinking, you know, too much and who's already too loosey goosey and she not paying attention. And, you know, everybody, the girlfriends, you know, that everybody's kind of doing their own thing. And the next thing, now here she goes, something been slipped. Easy. Cause she was already kind of loose. So not blaming the victim. Not doing that, not blaming the victim.
Yeah, just don't put yourself at risk.
This is how they pick the victims out. This is what I'm saying.
Yes.
This is how they identify
a higher
who
risk.
They're going to, and that puts you at
their victim is
a
going to be.
Risk. Right, yes. right. So not staming the victim, but again, when we do certain things, that makes it easier for the predator to come in because you pray. You're prey.
Don't
and
give now, something.
And if you go somewhere, stay together. When
don't
I came up,
something.
It was like
right.
that. And
don't
thank goodness, we were always safe. It's like who you go with, that's who you leave
you better
with.
Come
you, don't
back
have,
with.
You don't have somebody going off and you don't know where they're going and who they're going with.
Right.
And that's where you think about who your real friends are because your real friend is going to be like, you're tripping.
Okay.
Yeah,
you don't
what do you think you're doing?
What do you think you're doing?
Doing?
No. Yeah. That's not going to happen.
No.
So yeah. So again, similarly, as we talked about, not the social identity, but the discriminatory factor of systems, it's not the Super Bowl itself. So don't go out there thinking, oh, it's the Super Bowl. It's just that that's a particular time.
The
of
event
year.
Draws
the event.
And attracts. It attracts
yes.
that type
and
of
and it's celebratory. People are that's drinking. Right. And think about it, when you're having fun, you let your guards down.
Guard
so
down.
So, right. So you're more comfortable. So keep just being aware. So I'm gonna bring us back to our last question, which is Dr. Holmes, Dr. Dez, what advice can you give to those looking for help or support in their journey to liberate themselves from human trafficking or the symptoms that have now been produced due to human trafficking?
You know, regardless to whatever people may think or feel about therapy, I'm here to tell you, when you've gone through that level of trauma, that And it's complex trauma because you didn't just have one thing to happen to you. You've had multiple things over a course of a period of time. Mm-hmm. And that can even lead itself to even personality changes, right? To where, because people may even have things like memory loss that is related to it mm-hmm. or personality changes that could even lead to
disassociation.
Mm-hmm. A disorder. So therapy, and I mean a qualified therapist.
Yeah.
Really not. And again, no shade, but you need to really have someone qualified mm-hmm. who really understands trauma-informed mm-hmm. care, someone who really understands the cycle and the history, physical abuse, sexual abuse, all of those things, the emotional and psychological abuse that comes along with it. So therapy, and it's going to be a while. And I think for people,
not that short stint, like
years.
Yes.
No, we talking years. We're mm-hmm. talking a person it's going to be years to get people to work through. Because the thing is that developmentally, we're talking over the lifespan now. We're talking developmentally. Because you may have worked through something at this developmental stage and phase in your life. But then as you enter into another developmental stage and phase of life, something else gets triggered. And now you've got to work through that. So be patient. So the individual needs to be patient with him or herself. But then the people who are supporting that individual, you've got to be very, very understanding and patient, because it's not going to happen overnight. Mm-hmm. 2 months, 3 months, 6 months. So, you know, well, you've been going to therapy now for 6 months.
That's like a drop in the bucket.
Listen, you just now discovering my name, what my real name is, because your name has been changed more than likely. So you just now getting back to, you know, your real name is Desiree, but they might have been calling you Diana. You don't even know who Desiree is, right? Because you've been working under the auspices of Diana. So just even having to work through that. Who am I? Who am I really? So getting a therapist that really understands trauma-informed care, that really understands, you know, getting a really good diagnosis, and you may have to work with a psychiatrist as well. Yes. Unless you are in a state to where a psychologist can also go ahead and provide psychotropic medications, but you may also have to work with a psychiatrist, right? Because there may be psychotropic medications may have to come into play, you know, if you have someone suffering with severe depression, severe anxiety, PTSD,
suicidality, homicide,
you know, right. And then you might not be
so because it's understandable that you could feel like, yes,
mm-hmm. right. That's real. So really, really understanding that a qualified mental health worker who really understands getting someone, and it is okay to ask for a female.
Yes.
You know, it is okay to specify what you want in terms of your therapist. If it's you want an African American, you want a female, or, you know, I mean, you can request that, and it may take you a little longer to get it depending on where you're located geographically, but you can request for those things if that's what you need to help you get through that.
Thank you, Dr. Holmes. So again, very, very specialized, as you said, complex trauma, and trust. And yes, it often is, I do a lot of trauma work, and often individuals want a female, for that reason, because just being in the presence sometimes of a male may be triggering. Not that there aren't traffickers that are, female, but in terms of, you know, some of the other crimes that may happen that are more specific to male perpetrators. So keeping that in mind. I also like to repeat the numbers we shared earlier. To report suspected human trafficking to federal law enforcement, call 1-866-347-2423. Again, that number is 1-866-347-2423. And that's if you suspect human trafficking. To get help from the National Human Trafficking Hotline, call 1-888-373-7888. Again, that's 1-888-373-7888. You can also send an SMS message by text to 233-733. So again, at SMS message to 233-733 and text HELP or INFO. Thank you, Dr. Desiree L. Holmes, Dr. Des, for being here today. What a powerful, dynamic interview. We definitely have to have you back, because again, it's beyond January. This is the month that we highlight as the National Human Trafficking Prevention Month, but this is something that we have to keep on the forefront, particularly in our communities, because if we are not fighting and advocating for us, there is no one else doing it. So thank you so much for being here. If folks want to contact you or reach out to you, what would be the best way for them to reach out to you?
They can go ahead and send me an email. Well, it all runs together, all lowercase, Dr. Desiree Holmes, DRDESARIE at gmail.com. You can go ahead and reach out to me there and you can contact me and I will get back with you. Leave me your information and I will be sure to get back with you.
Thank you. Any social media?
I do. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me again under Dr. Desiree Holmes through Facebook. I do have a Facebook page and you can find me on LinkedIn as well under Dr. Desiree Holmes as well. And again, so that's DesareeHolmes.
Thank you. Once again, thank you, Dr. Holmes, for appearing on New Horizon, the Mind and Body Connection on Intentional Talk Radio Network. We have gained a great deal. Our next show is going to be February 12th. Thank you to all of our listeners for the questions. Those who couldn't listen live today, you can catch it on podcast form. Share it. Definitely get this information out. And remember that healthy mind and healthy body is key to longevity. Thank you all. Take care. The mineral, the iron, the copper, the coltan, the rubber, the coffee, the cotton, the sugar, the people, the people, the people, the people. The germ traveled faster than the bullet. They harvest the mountainside, protect the crops, herd the cattle. The people, the people, the people, the people, the people. The women and children were separated from the men. They are divided us according to the regional filters of their minds. The violence of arrogance crawls into the air, nestles into the geospatial cortex. We are not a conquered people.